Blog Talk Radio.
Greeting, Earthlings. We have now taken over your radio.
Welcome back, Rocket Nation, to another installment of the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We're live from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. tonight. We got a great, high anticipated show for you. Tonight, we are going to preview the entire American Football Conference. I pretty much spent the last 2 weeks making my predictions and having to chart down who's going to win the division, who's going to represent the wild card spot for the AFC, and who's going to be in the playoffs, period. So basically, this was a lot more challenging than I had thought. This is not easy because I really don't know how the AFC is really going to turn out overall this year. I kind of have an idea as to who's going to win the division, but I don't know what else to expect. Now, a lot of these teams have been making moves continuously throughout the season as far as their current rosters and trying to bring players up a notch from maybe being the last guy in that position on the depth chart to being maybe number two or number three. That's all still being worked out. The NFL season has officially kicked off, and we had our first preseason game of 2014 that took place this past weekend. Now, I didn't get a chance to see the game, but from what I watched, I caught the highlights, and I got to say, with the Giants and with the Bills, there's still some work to do. And let's be honest, that's what the preseason is. You don't expect teams to come out firing on all cylinders. It's just not going to happen. But what I will say, it's nice to see the players really get out there and get their feet wet. Whether you're playing one snap, two snaps, you're playing one series, or maybe even one quarter. That's pretty much what it is. Just to give you a quick recap, for those of you who didn't see the game, including yours truly, the Giants won 17-13. In the fourth quarter, Ryan Nassib passed a 73-yard touchdown pass to Corey Washington, which turned out to be the game winner. Now, as far as some of the bigger name players' performances are concerned, Eli Manning in the game went 6 of 7 for 43 yards. He was sacked once for a 21-yard loss, which actually turned out to be a fumble loss on the play, and that's been something that has been bothering him a lot of his career, protecting the football. This guy threw a lot of interceptions. He threw 29 interceptions last season. That's something that's going to have to be cleared up because that's two times in his career he led the league in INT. That should never happen. Ryan Nassib, who threw that game-winning touchdown for the Giants, completed 7 of 12 passes for 139 yards with that TD. He finished the game with a 126.7 passer rating. DJ Manuel, on the other hand, 2 of 7 for just 19 yards, throwing less than 29%. That's got to be worked on. I saw some of the throws he was making at times. I looked at him and I said, this guy's not setting his feet correctly. He's kind of losing accuracy on his passes. Sammy Watkins, who a lot of football fans, especially fans in Buffalo, have been waiting for it to see, basically, he did not catch a pass in this game. He was looked at a few times, but he did not catch a pass. And like I said, there's going to be some growing pains with him and EJ Manuel regarding their chemistry together. There's going to be a learning curve. There's going to be some sort of miscommunication at times. That's what you expect when you're a young quarterback and you're a young wide receiver. You have to be patient if you're a head coach. As far as I'm concerned, both teams certainly have work to be done. And it was a good win for the Giants preseason, and not considering that David Wilson is out for the rest of the season. In fact, it looks like his career is most likely over. I feel bad for him. And I talked about this, you know, regarding some friends of mine. In the NFL, everything comes with its territory. That includes injuries. And injuries are a part of the game. It's a rough sport. Guys get hurt all the time. And I've seen some players don't even get a chance to play in the NFL because of injuries they sustained in college or injury that they sustained during training camp and they were never the same, like a Kajana Carter 20-something years ago. It happens. And ironically, he played running back too. So the point is, it's unfortunate for David Wilson. And what makes the situation more difficult is the fact that his career, we never really got a chance to see his full potential. He's somebody that really could have been a major contributing factor for the Giants because the running game has been a bit of an issue these last couple years. They've been putting too much pressure on Eli Manning to go out there and win games. So regarding that, you have to wonder what's going to happen with this team going forward. You just lost someone that was very valuable. Now, Wilson gave a astonishing message at the press conference earlier today in regards to his injury and the aftermath of it. It's upsetting. For him, it has to be very upsetting because this is not something that you want. Every player tries his absolute best to avoid injury. It's not something that you want to see. Certainly not something that you want to happen to you, and you certainly don't want to see that happen to anybody else. Now you have to think about life after football. And if you're David Wilson, you have to move on. You have to move forward. Now, if I'm the Giants, I would like to keep him as a part of the team. Maybe have him be an assistant coach or something, or being a scout or something like that. Keep him amongst the franchise, because he was very well liked amongst the players and the coaching and the coaches, including Tom Coughlin, the head coach. He has a positive attitude. He's always been a positive individual. 23 years old. I mean, it's hurtful for him, and I feel totally bad for him. And I will say my prayers are to you for a speedy recovery. Maybe he can find a way back to the game one day. Through God, all things are possible. So take that into consideration. Well, we got a big show for you guys lined up tonight, and I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to presenting what I have to present to you. And speaking of another devastating injury, and hopefully this one won't be career-threatening. It took place just a few days ago over the weekend during the Team USA basketball scrimmages, basically their exhibitions with Paul George. We're going to talk about that when we come back. We're actually going to take our first quick break. We're going to do that right now, and we're going to talk about that and a whole lot more here on the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. The time is 7:15 p.m. Keep in mind, we are on air until 9 p.m. tonight. You can call into the show anytime at 347-327-9586. It seems as if injuries is almost like the theme of this show, because we've had nothing but injuries to talk about so far up to this point. But before we go deeper into that, we do have a couple birthdays to pass out. Happy 49th birthday to David Robinson, the Admiral, who arguably is one of the greatest centers in NBA history. This guy was a phenomenal basketball player, especially on the inside because of his height and his advantage and what he was able to do on the inside. 7'1", he was only about 240, but he was still a strong guy on the inside. He can block shots and did some phenomenal things. Just looking at his resume, he played about 14 years with the San Antonio Spurs, the two-time NBA champion, including in 2003 where he ended up retiring after winning his second championship. 1995, he was the NBA's most valuable player, 10-time NBA All-Star, 4-time All-NBA first team, 2-time All-NBA second team, 4-time All-NBA third team, 1992 NBA Defensive Player of the Year, 4-time All-NBA Defensive First Team, 4-time NBA All-Defensive Second Team, 1990s NBA All-Rookie of the Year, and All-Rookie First Team, NBA Sportsmanship Award in 2001. He was a scoring champion in 1994, led the league in blocks in 92, led the league in rebounds in 91, NBA's 50th anniversary all-time team, number 50, retired by the Spurs. I mean, how about that? He finished his career with 21.1 points per game, 10.6 career rebounds per game, and 3 career block shots per game. Just amazing. Just simply amazing. He actually, during the 93-94 season, he actually became locked in the duel for the NBA scoring title with Shaq, scoring 71 points in a game, 71 points. If I'm not mistaken, I think he also recorded a quadruple against the Pistons at one time in his career as well. So he's done some amazing things. He turns 49 today. Happy birthday to him. Also, happy birthday to Dale Ellis, another former NBA player. He turns 54 today. Came out of the University of Tennessee. He was a 9th pick overall in the 83 draft. Played with the Dallas Mavericks for 3 years. Spent some time with Seattle, Milwaukee, San Antonio with David Robinson. The Nuggets had another stint with Seattle and finished out his career with Milwaukee and the Charlotte Hornets. He was a one-time NBA All-Star, All-NBA third team both in the same year in 1989. 1987 NBA Most Improved Player. He was also the three-point shootout champion in 89. Consensus first team All-American in 1983, two-time SEC Player of the Year from 82 to 83, scored over 19,000 career points, 4,200 rebounds, and shot 40% career from three-point range. For his career, and he might not have put up a whole lot of big numbers, but, I mean, you know, it's not that big of a deal, you know, if he doesn't put up a whole lot of big numbers. But he did average 15.7 career points per game, as well as 3.5 career rebounds and 1.4 career assists per game. Never won an NBA championship, but he did play on some teams that contended for the title, contended for the finals, and was a good three-point shooter, one of the best in his era. So happy birthday to him. We have one other birthday to pass along. Happy birthday to Marvel Smith from the NFL. One of those guys that didn't play for a whole lot of years, but he turns 36 years of age today. Spent most of his time, well, pretty much his entire career with the Steelers. Did sign with the Niners at the end of his career in his final year, but he actually announced his retirement just a few months after he signed with the team. But he did spend his career with the Steelers, won two Super Bowls with the team, was a Pro Bowler in 04, played in 111 games and started 108 of them, and was a good, solid offensive tackle. Protected guys like Ben Roethlisberger, even protected Tommy Maddox when he was with the team. Was a solid offensive lineman, a very solid offensive lineman. So happy birthday to him. And happy birthday to Chris Harris. Well, we've had a few Chris Harrises in the NFL. quite a few of them, actually. Quite a few of them. This one here, he turns 32 years of age today. He spent his career, he actually had two stints with Chicago, played a few years in Carolina, played 1 year in Detroit, 1 year in Jacksonville before retiring last year. He's been the defensive quality control assistant coach of the Chicago Bears. He's actually second team All-Pro in 2010 and was part of that Bears team that went to the Super Bowl in 2006-2007. He finished his career with 439 tackles, 16 career interceptions, 32 passes deflected, and 13 forced fumbles. So happy birthday to him. Now, getting back to the whole injury talk, everyone is talking about Paul George and what happened with him, but it wasn't just him, apparently. At the top of the show, we talked about David Wilson. Now we got Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods played a practice round today. Played a last-minute practice round, which surprised many. A lot of people thought he would not play at all this week after he withdrew from the WGC Firestone with the back injury he sustained this past weekend. The withdrawal came after he missed 4 months due to back surgery this spring and struggled to regain his form since trying to at least make a comeback. I think we're also witnessing the end of another era, a much longer one, a much more sustainable one, and a much more prestigious one. I don't know if Tiger is ever going to catch Jack Nicklaus. I always wanted him to because I had been a big Tiger Woods fan. I always thought that he would break all of Jack Nicklaus's records. But I will say that in this case, I'm not sure because of injuries. People say, well, how is it possible that you can sustain an injury and not continue to play golf? Let me explain something to you. I've played golf a few times, not professionally, but I have played golf a few times. And I can tell you right now, if you have a back injury, that hurts you in your golfing, your putting, your long drive positions because you have to put a lot of strength into your back when you have to swing for that ball. Do you know how difficult that is to do with a back injury? Think about that for a second. Tiger Woods, the way he swings with a lot of power. So because of that back and everything, that hurts. That hurts a whole freaking lot, okay? I have to be the one to tell you. The way I look at it is, if Tiger doesn't do anything this year, I think he should hang up his golfing shoes permanently. He's accomplished a whole lot. A whole lot. I don't want to see his career end on injuries. You always want to see a guy like that go out on top. But I think that his days of being on top are kind of over. I hate to say it, but these last 5 years really have not been great years for him. Before then, the guy was on top of the game. The guy could hit the ball, could putt, could do every little thing in terms of golfing. And I think that this is the time for him to move on. Just like David Wilson. Because injuries are really starting to come aboard more in sports. And it can happen to anybody, unexpected. For the moment that Tiger suffered that back injury, I'm thinking, you know what? He should just take the rest of this year off and maybe come back and play in one more tournament, win or lose, and just hang it up. But try telling that to Tiger. It's his livelihood, and this is a guy who enjoys doing what he does. It's hard to throw that away and hang all of that up and move on into another life. Take Jerry Rice, for example. Now, Jerry Rice's career didn't really end on injury. Jerry Rice played a heck of a long time. I mean, it was a hell of a long NFL career. This guy suited up for four different teams, and he wanted to continue playing. Now, a lot of us growing up as fans, we all thought that Jerry Rice was invincible. We were like, yeah, Jerry Rice, he owns half the NFL record books. This guy's going to play forever. Turned out to not be such the case. The one thing I will tell you is, as an athlete, when you grow up and you do what you have been doing, and you get better at it, and you become more successful at it, it's hard to leave. It's hard to quit the game when you love playing it. Whether you win championships or not, it's really hard to quit for a lot of guys. Now, I will tell you that in Tiger's case, maybe he could always come back to it one day. You don't want to officially rule him out completely forever. But I do think that in this case, it's a different time now. It's a different era. And it's time to kind of move on and let somebody else dominate the game. That being said, if this is it for him, I want to wish this guy the best. This guy broke into the scene in the 90s and just took the golfing world by storm. He gave a lot of fans reasons to watch golf again, especially black fans who never really particularly watched golf, including myself, because I really didn't start watching golf until he came on the scene. And because of that, I think that he helped make golf a little bit more popular, and he boosted the ratings. If Tiger's not there, nobody is watching golf. I hate to say it, but that's just the way it is. That's like trying to watch a Spider-Man cartoon and not see Spider-Man on there. That's like trying to watch Garfield and Garfield isn't really on there. Can't be done. That's like, for a lot of people, that's like trying to watch a Batman episode and there is no Batman or no Bruce Wayne, especially Robin or Batgirl or something. That's it. Now, that being said, I want to wish Tiger well. Continue to live, and may God continue to bless you. Going forward, definitely, definitely. Now, the timing is 7:30. We're taking calls all night, 347-327-9586. We're on air till 9 p.m. We're going to talk the AFC preview. Speaking of one more little piece of injury to talk about, what happened to Paul George was devastating. I couldn't even watch it. It happened on Friday, last Friday. I could not watch that. I could not watch that. I hadn't seen anything that devastating in basketball since Sean Livingston 7 years ago. And I hadn't seen anything that devastating in sports, period, since Anderson Silva last year. However, both of those guys have come back. Sean Livingston came back and had a better career, actually. Anderson Silva's on the verge of coming back this year to UFC. Considering how that whole injury happened, seriously, it teaches you two things in basketball. Number one, they have got to move the hoop post back. It's much closer in Olympic international play than it is in the actual NBA. You got to move that goalpost back. The guys are going to crash into that thing. Something's going to happen, much like Paul George, or something even worse, or possibly even more fatal. Okay? And number two, if you are a head coach of a professional team, do you want your star players participating in international competition? I'm pretty sure if Larry Bird and Frank Vogel knew that this was going to happen, they would have told Paul George, no, not happening. We need you. You are a vital piece of our team going forward and trying to win a championship. We are not going to let you risk anything. Now, there's nothing wrong with playing and representing your country, because a lot of players want to represent the Team USA. That's a lifelong dream for a lot of these guys. But I think the Paul George situation might turn a few heads away. It was one of those injuries that looked even worse in slow motion. I couldn't even watch it. I saw it one time in regular speed, and I cringed. I felt like I was about to vomit. I felt like I tore my own leg and ankle. I felt like that was me out there. It happened when he smashed his right leg, smashed into the basket stanchion and crumpled while he was trying to block James Harden's fast break layup attempt. Normally, they in scrimmage games, they teach players, okay, just don't do that or don't do this. You know, we're just running friendly scrimmages. But players have a competitive spirit. Paul George has a competitive spirit. I understand. I understand. Larry Bird can kind of understand what Paul George is going through. But Larry Bird played on that 92 Dream Team. Best USA basketball team ever, by the way. There will never be another to top that. But this is something that the league is going to have to take into consideration a little bit about letting certain players go and play overseas and represent the team in international competition. If I was a basketball head coach, I don't know. I don't know if I would let a lot of my star players. Let's say I was coach of, let's say I was the coach of some team like the Clippers. Now, Blake Griffin withdrew from the USA team due to injuries that he had sustained during the season in the playoffs. Smart on his part. I don't know if I would let him, Chris Paul, or DeAndre Jordan, even Jamal Crawford, go overseas and play. I just don't know if I would do that. Now, the Spurs organization actually told Manu Ginobili that they're not going to let him play for Argentina. That actually turned out to be a smart move. Speaking of the Spurs, they actually hired former WNBA star Becky Hammon as their assistant coach. She's the first full-time paid NBA assistant coach in league history. She will actually start her new job when her current one, playing in the NBA for the San Antonio Stars, will be over at the end of this season. She actually was part of the Spurs coaching staff a little bit last year, helping out at times and kind of providing her input towards some of the players. Now she's going to get a chance to be in a full-time assistant coach. Will we ever see a female coach in the NBA? Maybe in another movie, probably. But we'll see. We'll see. Who knows? I will welcome that. I'll be okay with that. Wouldn't bother me at all. It really wouldn't. And you can quote me on this, by the way. Speaking of other news, the Toronto Raptors have signed center Lucas Nogueira and guard Will Cherry. Terms of the deal announced this past week and were not disclosed. So Raptors are continuing to make some moves. They're trying to get better. The New York Knicks have still continued to make more moves. They have acquired forwards Quincy Acey and Travis Outlaw from the Sacramento Kings earlier today, for guard Wayne Ellington and forward Jeremy Tyler. Also, New York reduced the protection on the 2016 second-round pick and sent it to Portland in 2012, and the Kings later acquired it from Portland. Travis Outlaw is the standout name in this trade. He averaged his career of 8.5 points and 3.2 rebounds in 622 games in 11 seasons with Portland, Clippers, New Jersey, and Sacramento. Last year for the Kings, he averaged 5.4 points and 2.7 rebounds in 63 games. These are guys that Phil Jackson are making these moves happen. But we'll see what happens, though. A lot of fans online are not really too big on this trade, but you never know. Sometimes players need a new change of scenery to establish themselves better. That's the way I look at it. I don't see what the big deal is. So we'll see. Anything to try and keep Carmelo, right? right. Well, we are now after the 7:30 hour. When we come back, we're going to get right into it with the AFC talk. We also got some baseball games. We have some in progress now as we speak. Others have ended today, and we got some games that are going to be coming up within the next half an hour, within the next hour, and before this night is over. So with that being said, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, we got this to talk about, and some of y'all might want to pay attention to this because I'm going to be talking about your team, good or bad, whoever your team is that you support. I'm just going to lay it on the line. I'm going to let you know these are my predictions. I have my information in front of me, and I'm ready to present it to you. That being said, this is the Rocket Sports Breakdown here on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be back in a flash. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. The time is 7:40. We are on air till 9 p.m. tonight. Feel free to call us anytime at 347-327-9586. Got some baseball to pass along real quick, some of the games. Well, last night, kind of fast forward to rewind a little bit last night, I was watching the game between the Tigers and the Yankees, David Price's debut. Now, he didn't get the decision, unfortunately, because the Tigers are losing for much of the game, actually, up until the seventh inning, where Alex Avila, who turned out to be the hero of the game, recorded an RBI single, which tied the game, and then he added a home run at the top of the 12th inning, which proved to be the game-winning run. Joaquin Soria got the win for Detroit, during 2-4, and Joe Nathan got his 23rd save of the season. But just to give you a track on what David Price did last night, he pitched 8.2 innings. He had 8 hits and 3 runs, but 10 and 2 home runs, but 10 strikeouts. I like that. I'll take that any day of the week. So the Tigers won that game in 12 innings. These two teams are playing right now as we speak. And currently the Tigers are up 1-0. In the second inning, my man Mickey, Miguel Cabrera, hit a sacrifice fly to right, which allowed Rajay Davis to score. They're currently holding a 1-0 lead in the bottom of the second inning. This is the third of a 4-game series between these two teams. The fourth game will take place tomorrow afternoon, at 1 o'clock Eastern time. You can check your local listings. If you live on the East Coast, you pretty much know what you have to do. Some games that are currently taking place right now, we got Cleveland and Cincinnati. Both teams are scoreless in the bottom of the second inning. Right now, Toronto is up on Baltimore by a score of 2-1. Baltimore actually just scored. Chris Davis homered to deep left. But the Orioles are still down by one run currently. We have the Pittsburgh Pirates up on the Miami Marlins 4-1. That game is in the top of the second inning. Obviously, Pittsburgh scored all 4 of their runs in the first inning. It started with Ike Davis with a ground rule double to deep left center, which scored Josh Harrison and Gregory Polanco. Travis Snyder, he comes up the bat, grounds out the second, which scores Russell Martin. Jordy Mercer, he singled to shallow right, which scored Ike Davis. So, as you can see, that's how the Pittsburgh Pirates got all 4 of their runs. Philadelphia, they're up 5-1 on the Houston Astros. They scored 5 runs in the first inning. Ryan Howard was one of the guys responsible with a double to left, which scored 2 runs. He scored himself on a wild pitch. And Will Knives hit a sacrifice fly to shallow left, which scored Marlon Byrd. And David Buchanan singled to shallow right, which Grady Sizemore and Cody Ask, Grady Sizemore scored. Jimmy Buchanan actually tried to make it to second base, but he got caught out, which ended the inning. So we're currently in the top of the second. The Astros got some serious work to do if they want to try and get back in this game. And we also have the Washington Nationals up 3-0 on the New York Mets. We're in the bottom of the third inning. Washington got their 3 runs in the first inning with Jason Worth with a single to shallow right, which scored Anthony Rendon, and Adam LaRoche homered to deep right center, which scored Worth. So they're up 3-0. Quick scoring update, Cincinnati just scored 3 runs on Cleveland, so they're up 3-0 currently. How about that? 3 runs. 3 runs. And how it went down? A 3-run homer by Zach Cozart. You always gotta love those home runs sometimes. Just to give you also a quick recap of the games that went down earlier today, Seattle defeated Atlanta by a score of 7-3. Both of these two teams still have winning records, but barely. These two teams are actually trying to get respective wild card spots in their conferences. Chris Young got the win. He's 10-6 against Julio Teheran, who's now 10-8, but he drops his 8th loss for the season. Austin Jackson for Seattle, the former Tiger, 1-5. He struck out, but he did get one hit in. Dustin Ackley recorded a home run in his game. He went 2-5 that bat. And Logan Morrison recorded a home run. He went 1-4. Tampa Bay defeated Oakland 7-3. If you're the Tigers, you got to be loving that. Jeremy Hellickson got his first win this season. He's 1-1. The guy he defeated, Sonny Gray, the sophomore, drops to 12-5. Been one of the top pitchers this season in the American League. Josh Reddick for Oakland, though, he did record 2 RBIs. He went 1-4 at the plate. Desmond Jennings, though, recorded 2 RBIs for Tampa Bay. And so Tampa Bay actually was losing the last 2 games, and now they win this one. Texas defeated Chicago, the White Sox by a score of 3 to run, and San Diego defeated the Minnesota Twins 5-4 in 10 innings. Coming up, we got Boston and St. Louis at 8:15. That game will take place on ESPN. At 8:40 p.m., we got the Chicago Cubs against the Colorado Rockies. At 8:10 p.m., we got San Francisco taking on Milwaukee. At 9:40 p.m., we got Kansas City and Arizona. And at 10:05 p.m. tonight, it's the Battle of the Bays, or should I say the Battle of the L.A.s. The Dodgers and the Angels will square off. Moving over into the NFL, and it's that time of year. First preseason game took place. We got some preseason games that are getting ready to come up, actually, later this week. And I'm looking forward to these games. In case you didn't know, yes, Brian Hoyer will get the start in Cleveland's first preseason opener against my hometown team, Detroit, on Saturday. Johnny Manziel will get some snaps. He might actually play a little bit longer. So, and good for the Browns to do this. Why would you want to start Johnny Manziel? Brian Hoyer is the only quarterback for Cleveland since they came back in the NFL 15 years ago to ever have a winning record. He's 3-0. And you're going to start Johnny Manziel, an unproven rookie? Let's be realistic here. These idiots on ESPN drive me crazy. All they want to talk is Johnny Manziel this, Johnny Manziel that. Shut up. Okay? Because it's getting annoying. I can't even watch ESPN anymore sometimes because that's all they seem to want to talk about. That being said, I'm glad that the Browns coaching staff made the right decision by starting Hoyer. How he plays remains to be seen. That right there is going to be one of the keys to determining if this team is going to go forward and what this team is going to do going forward. Okay. So that being said, I'm glad that it's happening. And I'm looking forward to watching these games. Now, the next set of preseason games will take place tomorrow night. We have 6 games scheduled to take place, including the Super Bowl rematch between the Seahawks and the Broncos. That game will take place at 9 p.m. We also got the Cowboys against the Chargers. We got the Colts against the Jets. Basically, it's going to be storyline points this game for the Dallas Cowboys against the Chargers. What is that defense going to look like now that Sean Lee is gone? What's Tony Romo going to do? What's the status of him? San Diego, what is this offense going to look like now that Ken Whitehunt has moved on to take the Titans head coaching job? For the Colts and the Jets, Geno Smith and Michael Vick. It's going to be the battle with these two guys. Geno Smith is actually named the starter for this game, but will he be able to hang on to the starting job? If you're Indianapolis, you're one of those teams that you're on the rise a little bit, but what are you going to do now? How are you going to look this upcoming season? The Patriots and the Washington Redskins will square off. These two teams have had a joint practices this past week. Washington actually suffered quite a devastation earlier today with DeSean Jackson suffering what looks to be an injury And the timing could not have been worse, okay? Because you don't want to see this happen. You certainly don't want to see anything bad go down between a team and a guy that they bring over to a team. Now, according to reports, they're saying that he's not seriously injured. He actually left practice earlier today with a foot injury. His status for tomorrow's game is in doubt. You want to see him play, though, because you want to see what kind of chemistry he's going to have with the Redskins offense, particularly the quarterback Robert Griffin III. You want to see him play, but here's the thing. If he doesn't play, he's got three more preseason games to really develop some chemistry. Because here's the thing. The third preseason game is when you're going to see the starters play a lot of minutes anyway and a lot of snaps on the field. So that being said, if he doesn't play tomorrow, it's not really that big of a deal. Now, we also have the Saints and the Rams squaring off. Both of these two teams, St. Louis is still trying to figure them out. If Sam Bradford can stay healthy this upcoming season, what is this team going to do? And we're actually going to talk about this in our next show, more than likely next week when we preview the NFC. That's going to be something worth talking about with the Rams. And for the Saints, you got Jimmy Graham under contract now. Got him as the highest paid tight end in league history. Is he going to live up to it even more? What type of expectations will there be more on him? And here's the thing, how is this offense going to look a little bit now that Dan Sproles is gone? So there's going to be some question marks for both these two teams, and we're going to talk more about that in our next show. And we also have the Raiders and the Vikings, two teams that really identity crisis a little bit, especially Minnesota. Teddy Bridgewater, the guy that the Vikings drafted in the first round with the final pick in a trade with Seattle. New head coach, Mike Zimmer, who will be a head coach for the first time in his NFL career. So there's a lot of question marks surrounding the Vikings. Now, where's the leadership going to come from now that you don't have Jared Allen anymore? How long will Adrian Peterson want to stay with this team? Because keep in mind, his name had been suspect of trade rumors throughout last season, even after the passing of his son. In fact, that's when the rumors started to increase even more. So that's something that you certainly want to think about. And if you're the Redskins, you want to think about it real, real, real quick, okay? So that's something to think about. So we're going to take another quick break. Yes, keep staying on the show. When we get back, we are immediately going to talk about the AFC preview. This is what we do. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown. We're approaching the 8 o'clock hour. Join us. Kick back and enjoy the show. We got one more hour left of broadcast time, so we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. The time is approximately 8 o'clock p.m. and we do have some NFL news to pass along before we get into our special segment, I should say. Former NFL quarterback Donovan McNabb will call some NFL games for Fox this season. He's actually going to rotate with former NFL and Notre Dame quarterback Brady Quinn and longtime linebacker Kirk Morrison as a color commentator alongside Dick Stockton, who will be the play-by-play announcer. McNabb has actually worked as an analyst for Fox Sports 1 since the network launched a year ago. Fox also announced earlier today that recently retired New York Giants offensive lineman David Deal will call games with Tom Brennan replacing Brian Billick. Longtime defensive back Rondae Barber takes over for Tim Ryan as the analyst paired with Chris Myers. Barber worked with Stockton last season. Speaking of running backs, Knowshon Moreno was activated Wednesday. But active? Not so much. The Dolphins running back came off the physically unable to perform list and joined practice today. That forced him to miss the first 12 days of training camp. He spent much of the workout just watching and not doing the 11-on-11 drills. And it doesn't look like he's going to play in the first preseason game Friday against Atlanta. He just came over to the team as a free agent, coming over from Denver, playing five seasons there. He actually underwent arthroscopic surgery on his left knee in June and said his rehabilitation as expected. So he's slowly but surely working his way back. And he's somebody that the Dolphins are certainly going to need going forward in this season. Saints owner Tom Benson, after being hospitalized for difficulty breathing and dehydration twice in the past 2 weeks, he left training camp in West Virginia early today. Team spokesman Greg Benzel said the 87-year-old is doing well and on today returned to work at team offices. So actually, he left early during training camp, I say. I'm sorry about that. Yesterday, he was taken to a hospital in Lewisburg and was released after being given oxygen and a series of tests. Benzel says Benson had a good night at the Greenbrier Resort and woke up feeling great. According to Benzel, Benson apparently struggled with the altitude in the Allegheny Mountains, actually. The Saints practice fields are at an elevation of about 2,000 feet where New Orleans is at sea level. Well, best wishes and speedy recovery to the owner, Tom Benson. Now former Cardinals tight end Jake Ballard has announced his retirement from the NFL. According to a statement, he pretty much said that his body never has felt the same since he sustained a severe knee injury while playing for the Giants in that Super Bowl against New England just a few years ago. He was signed by the Giants as an undrafted rookie free agent out of Ohio State in 2010. During their Super Bowl season, he started 13 regular season games, catching 38 passes for 604 yards and 4 touchdowns. He actually came over to New England, ironically, the following season, but missed the entire season because of that knee injury. He signed with the Cardinals back in November of last year, played for 8 games, and started 3 of them. And now he is also calling it quits due to a career-ending injury, which it appears to be. Again, injuries have been the theme of this broadcast tonight. Another injury, Jaguars running back Toby Gerhart is expected to miss the preseason open against Tampa Bay. Coach Gus Bradley ruled him out today, just a couple days before their Friday preseason game against state rival the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Gerhart actually came over to the team after spending his career with the Vikings since being drafted by them in 2010. And this is somebody who is expected to be Maurice Jones-Drew's backup. Maurice Jones-Drew moved on to Oakland just a few months ago. He signed a 3-year contract with Jacksonville, Toby Gerhart did, worth $10.5 million. So far, he's totaled 1,305 rushing yards and 5 touchdowns the last 4 years. They signed him to be their automatic starter, expecting him to get about 15 to 20 carries a game. Now you have to wonder if they're going to give him that much right now. not in the preseason, obviously, but maybe the first few games of the season, you're probably going to see this team throw a whole lot better. I'll get to the Jacksonville Jaguars in just a second when I make my preview real quickly. Just to follow up on the preseason schedule tomorrow, there's two other games I forgot to announce. Well, we already got last season's Super Bowl preview. Now we're going to have the season before Super Bowl preview rematch with the 49ers and the Ravens. Those two teams will score up tomorrow night on preseason. And the Bengals will take on the Chiefs. Friday, we have the Dolphins and Falcons, as we talked about. Buccaneers and Jaguars. Buffalo will play another preseason game, this time against Carolina. Philadelphia will take on Chicago. Already talked about the Saints and the Rams. That game is actually on Friday, I should say. And we got Oakland against Minnesota. That game will be on Friday. Saturday, talked about Cleveland and Detroit. The Giants will have their second preseason game hosting Pittsburgh. Green Bay will take on Tennessee. And the new Houston Texans will take on the Cardinals. So, football is back, baby. Football is back. Now, getting into my AFC preview, basically, this is what I have right now. I'm going to start with each division. Basically, I have the Patriots winning the division. I got them going 12-4. I got the Bills coming in at second place at 7-9. I got the Dolphins at 6-10, and I got the Jets at 4-12. All four of these teams have tough divisions, having to go up against the NFC North, having to go up against the AFC West. My whole thought process is I don't think the Jets have really done a whole lot to automatically be better. I think they could win 5 or 6 games, but I got them winning 4 because I think that this team is going to be in trouble within their division. And the reason why I got them winning 4 games is this. First of all, I don't see them beating Green Bay. I don't see them beating Detroit. And I don't see them going to even Minnesota to win. Now, that's a possibility that they could end up going to win that game at Minnesota Stadium. But I'm not so sure how they're going to look at the rest of their schedule. I don't see them beating Denver, Kansas City, or San Diego. I can't see them beating Tennessee or Pittsburgh either. That's a tough schedule for them. And if you're Buffalo, again, you're playing some of the same teams. You also got to play the Texans and the Browns. How well are you going to match up with this team? I'm not so sure. But I think Buffalo is going to be more on the uprise than the Jets because I think they're going to have more of an explosive offense. Okay. I also think that in this case, I also think that Miami, did they do a whole lot? No. Because I still wonder about that offensive line. And I think this team really, they're still not really much of the same. Now, I know Sean Marino is going to help do some things, but you can't count on him every week, you know, to bail your offense out. I just don't know if they have enough to do that. So, basically, that's what I got. I got the Patriots going 12-4. I got them sweeping all of their division competition. If you look at last year, this team, they won the majority of their games while being beat up on both sides of the ball. Keep in mind, Vince Wilfork was hurt. Rob Gronkowski was hurt. Aaron Hernandez was pretty much exiled from the team. This team was beat up. They had to go out and acquire other players to come in and help right away. Imagine what this team is going to look like more healthy on offense and defense. Bring in Darrell Revis. Tom Brady's got a chip on his shoulder. I got the Patriots really dominating the AFC East, for sure. Definitely. Now, they are going to play Denver in the regular season, but I got the Broncos winning this time because I think the Broncos did more than the Patriots did during the offseason. I also think that despite both quarterbacks and their ages, I feel like Denver is still one step ahead of New England. And I look at the Patriots' schedule, I mean, they got to play the NFC North. They got Green Bay. They got Detroit. They got Chicago. They got Minnesota. I can see them winning 3 of those games. They got Detroit and Chicago at home. They can certainly win those games. Got Minnesota on the road. They can win that game for sure. The tough game will be at Lambeau Field, though. That's going to be a tough game. Also, like I said, they got Denver, they got Kansas City, they got San Diego and Oakland, they got a rematch, a playoff rematch against Indianapolis, and they got a possible playoff preview against Cincinnati. Now remember, last year, the Patriots were 4-0 before traveling to Cincinnati, and the Bengals were the first team to beat them. I expect the Patriots to get revenge this time. I expect the Colts to get revenge on the Patriots. So either way, I got the Patriots winning 12 games. I got them winning the AFC. And you can quote me on that, by the way. Okay? Moving on to the AFC North. This is what I got going on. I got Cincinnati and Pittsburgh, basically two teams that if you're the Bengals, you're still on the rise a little bit. If you're the Steelers, you're trying to get back to division supremacy. I think the Steelers are going to do that this year. I got the Steelers also winning 12 games. I got them splitting their regular season matchup with Cincinnati. I got them sweeping Baltimore and sweeping Cleveland. Since they're playing the NFC South, I got them losing on the road to Carolina and Atlanta, but I got them beating New Orleans and Tampa Bay. They also got the AFC South. I got them beating the Colts, the Texans, and the Jaguars. I do have them losing a game at Tennessee because Tennessee's a tough place to play. And I got them beating the Jets and the Chiefs. Cincinnati, I got them also sweeping Baltimore and Cleveland. I got them losing to New Orleans. I got them beating Carolina. I got them beating Atlanta, and I got them beating Tampa Bay. But I have them losing to Indianapolis and Houston, and I have them beating Tennessee and Jacksonville. I got them losing to the Patriots, and check this. I got them upsetting the Broncos. Yes, my favorite AFC team. I got the Bengals upsetting the Broncos. That game's going to take place in Cincinnati. I think that's going to be a statement game for the Bengals, letting them know, hey, we're coming after you too. It ain't just New England you should be worried about. You should be worried about us as well. We're coming for you. And I think because the Bengals have shown something, that defense is going to get better. I expect Andy Dalton to try and play up to expectations. Now, they got him his big contract. All right? He's got a big contract. And I think that if he's going to have to live up to that, he's got to be the guy to play better, period, bar none. You got some weapons. You got A.J. Green, who's a top three receiver in this league. This could be the make or break year for the Bengals. But I got them going second place in the division because I think that Pittsburgh is going to be that much better because I think that the relationship with Ben Roethlisberger and Ty Haley is going to get better. And I think that's going to be a major factor as far as what the Steelers' offense is going to look like. Yeah, now they got veterans on the defensive side, but these are the Steelers. They always find players to come out of the ashes and just all of a sudden make major contributions. We saw that with James Harrison. We saw that with Larry Foote. We saw that with guys when the Steelers were winning their Super Bowls in the past decade. I seriously think that they have a shot to get back to that same elite status again. Now, Baltimore and Cleveland. Cleveland, this is basically a rebuild year. I don't expect Cleveland to do a whole lot. Now, they got Joe Hayden. They got him signed to a big contract, making him the highest paid cornerback in football. But a cornerback is not always a determining factor. This team is going to have some offense if they're going to have success. Bar none. Now, I got them winning 5 games. I got them splitting with Baltimore. I also got them beating Tampa Bay. I also got them upsetting the Colts. I think they can upset the Colts because the Colts are one of those teams that they tend to overlook inferior competition. I also got them beating the Texans. I got them beating the Raiders because they'll be playing the Raiders as well. But who knows? Maybe the Browns can win more games. But I think the success is going to be far beyond Brian Hoyer. It's going to have to be the other pieces that they got. Trent Richardson is going to have to play better. Well, I'm sorry, no, not Trent Richardson. The other running backs that they got. These guys are really going to have to step their games up, period. That being said, I have Cleveland winning 5 games, but I think they can win more. I certainly think that they can win more. But they got such a tough schedule, though. But is it really that tough? because you got teams like Atlanta and Carolina on the road. Here's the thing. You get to play Indianapolis at home. You get to play Houston at home. You get Pittsburgh at home. You get New Orleans at home. Are those games going to be really tough? It's very possible. It's highly possible. And I'm just not sure how this team is going to look. Now, they got Ben Tate. They got Terrence West as the two running backs. But here's the thing. Not having Josh Gordon, because I think Josh Gordon will probably be suspended for the entire season. That is going to hurt this team, no matter who the starting quarterback is. Andrew Hawkins, Nate Burleson, and Miles Austin are not going to be enough. Josh Gordon is your guy. And you can't ask Jordan Cameron to fill that void. That being said, I'm not so sure what this team is going to do. It's basically a rebuilding year. Because Johnny Manziel is not going to come in and make this a playoff team. It's just not going to happen. Not this year. Next year, we'll see, but not this year. And the Ravens, I mean, yeah, they brought over Steve Smith, but how much more does Steve Smith have to give as a wide receiver? And I still think that even losing the pieces that they had last year is still going to hurt this team. That's the way I look at it. I still think that that's going to hurt this team a little bit. So we're about halfway through with our AFC previews. We're actually going to take another break. When we come back, we got a lot more to talk about in the AFC. So with that being said, strap up your seatbelts, get ready for a power trip. We're approaching 8:30. We got about 40 minutes left of airtime. Feel free to call in. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. Welcome back to the Rocket Sports Breakdown. The time is now 8:30, and we got 30 more minutes left on our show. I hope you're enjoying it. You can call in at 347-327-9586. And we're continuing with the AFC preview. Now, basically, this is what we got. We're about halfway through it, actually, and we're shifting over to the AFC South. I got the Colts winning it. I got them going 10-6, actually, because I think it's going to be a little bit tougher than it was last year. The only team I could really see coming out and challenging the Colts is the Titans, because even though they don't have Chris Johnson anymore, I still think that this particular team is tough. The Titans are a tough physical team. They'll challenge you on offense and defense, and I think bringing in Ken Whisenhunt was a tremendous move. He's going to open that offense up and do a lot of things. The question for the Titans will be, can Jake Locker stay healthy? That has been the number one question mark with the Titans for the last some odd years, actually. Can Jake Locker stay healthy? Now, I will say they went out and they actually made a couple other moves just recently. They cut their quarterback, Tyler Wilson, and actually came to terms with two players, including tight end Chase Kaufman. Wilson was signed last December, but the Titans traded up in the sixth round and drafted Zach Mittenberger out of LSU to help back up Jake Locker and Charlie Whitehurst. So now I think it's going to be more of an open competition with the quarterback position. Kaufman, who played at Missouri, has been with Cincinnati and Atlanta in the NFL, has four career catches. Now he's going to be replacing tight end Doran Dickerson, who hurt his leg in practice this past weekend and has been placed on injured reserve. The Titans also agreed to terms of defensive tackle Lanier Coleman, who took part in the team's rookie minicamp back in May. That being said, though, I still think that if Jake Locker can stay healthy, this team can do some things. Now, they got Sean Green as their running back. I think Sean Green is more than ready to carry the load. You still got Nate Washington. Now you also got Kendall Wright. You got Justin Hunter. And you got an offensive line that, you know, can always get better. But I think the weight of the Titans is really going to come down to not just the offense, but the defensive side of the ball. Basically, you got Sean Phillips now. You bring him over. He comes over as a free agent. Akeem Ayers, you got him. You still got Bernard Pollard. You also got Michael Griffin, the other safety. So there's some pieces there. There's some pieces for this team to go out and do some things, but they're going to need a lot more. And they're going to go as far as Jake Locker can take. If he's healthy, this team can be able to do some things. But I will tell you right now, Charlie Whitehurst, he's going to be breathing down Jake Locker's neck, as he should, as a lot of young backup quarterbacks should. Whether you're playing behind a rookie or a second-year player or a veteran who's been around the league for about 10-plus years. This team right now is the team that has the biggest question mark out of all those teams in AFC, because they could be a playoff contender or they could fold early and drop throughout the regular season. I got the Texans going 6-10 because I think that the quarterback situation has not really been solved, and I would have said the same thing even with Matt Schaub. I was never really sold on Matt Schaub, though. I hate to say it, I was never really sold on the guy. I think we saw his true colors last year. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that this guy doesn't have what it takes to make it in the NFL. Maybe he needed a change of scenery, because he sure as hell wasn't getting it done. This guy was throwing interceptions every game, and it seemed like every pick he threw was going to be returned for a touchdown. Can't do that in the NFL and succeed. You just can't do that. Now, Ryan Fitzpatrick has bounced around the league for a handful of years. He's played with about four or five teams. Most recently, he was actually in Tennessee backing up Jake Locker and had to step in and take over when Jake Locker got hurt last year. Now he comes over. You got Case Keenum as your backup, as your potential backup. Andre Johnson, who has emphatically said he does not want to come to camp, he's not sure about his future, he came back to camp, but that still wavers in the back of your mind if you're the coaching staff. because now you are really going to have to put a lot of pressure on your players to step their games up. You got to step your game up too as a coach and get this team to believe and get out there and try and go for another Super Bowl run. That's what it's really going to come down to. Arian Foster had actually recently contemplated retirement during the offseason. That's also another problem. So this team, if they're not careful, they could fold real quickly. Real quickly. Now, got your Davion Clowney, but you got to see what this guy's going to do. Does he have the attitude? Does he have the work ethic? So far, he's been showing that in practice throughout training camp, but you're going to need a whole lot more of that. You got Brian Cushing coming back. J.J. Watt is still there. You also got Tim Jameson. But I wonder what the Texans secondary is going to do. I've never looked at anybody in the history of the Texans secondary that's ever scared me. If I'm a quarterback, I will attack that secondary. Dead on. And the Texans are expected to run a 3-4 scheme this season, so that's going to change things up a little bit too. So I'm not so sure what this team is going to look like. That's why I only got them winning about 6 or 7 games. Jacksonville is the one team, and I think that's going to make tremendous improvement as far as like getting better from where you were a year ago, because they could not have gotten any worse than they did last year. That being said, I think Jacksonville has the ability to win 6 games. I can see them splitting with Houston. I can see them splitting with Tennessee. I can maybe even see them splitting with Indianapolis. Who says that the Colts are really going to run away with this division? The Colts still need wide receiver help, and I'm not so sure they really did that during the offseason. Now, looking at the Colts roster, before I go back to Jacksonville, because I talked about them a little bit earlier throughout the show, you got Hakeem Nicks. Okay, that's good. Reggie Wayne is already up there in age. But here's the problem. Trent Richardson and Ahmad Bradshaw are going to have to step their games up, especially Trent Richardson, because he's already looked like a monumental bust. The Colts got a very solid offensive line, and you got Andrew Luck, who's a big, strong guy, can escape the pass rush, can spread out to the outside, can throw the ball, has got good arm strength. But it would be nice if this guy had even better targets to throw to. What's to say that Hakeem Nicks and Reggie Wayne are going to be a scary potent 1-2 punch? I can't really see that right now, but I've been wrong before. And I'm not going to sit here and say that this team doesn't have what it takes to get there. But there's a whole lot that could still be there. You understand what I'm saying? There's a whole lot that could still be there. So that being said, watch out for the Jaguars. I think this team, they could compete for a possible wild card spot. Yes, I said it. I said it. I said it. And I'm laughing because you never know what can happen in the NFL, man. Every year, there's always one or two teams from each conference that just comes out of nowhere that didn't do diddly squat the previous year. And then they just come out and just start being good. Jaguars have been in a bit of a tight spot because of what's been going on with Justin Blackmon. You don't have Maurice Jones Jr. no more. You now got Toby Gerhart, who's the starter. You got Chad Henne. What's going to happen with him? Here's the thing. Look at your wide receivers. Marquise Lee, Mike Brown, Cecil Short III, Allen Robinson. Do any of those guys look or sound scary to you? No. But it's one thing to have a bunch of young receivers that are still learning and still trying to get better and develop on the NFL level. But I've never really been sold on Chad Henne, even when he was a quarterback at Michigan. I didn't really like him too much back then, and I'm not so sure he's the guy going forward for Jacksonville. That's been the problem ever since Mark Brunell left. They have struggled to find that franchise quarterback. Byron Leftwich was supposed to be the guy. Kept getting hurt a lot. Bounced around a few teams. Had about 2 different stints in Pittsburgh. David Garrard, who's actually Byron Leftwich's backup, had to step in when Leftwich was getting hurt and was becoming unproductive. Garrard was actually doing some things, but next thing you know, he becomes unproductive. And they have struggled to find that guy. How do we know he's going to be that interesting? This is why you drafted Blake Bortles. I think we will see Blake Bortles starting at some point this season. Probably at the halfway point. I think out of all the rookie quarterbacks, I think Blake Bortles has the best chance to be a starter. Because I'm not sold on Chad Henne. And you can say the same thing for Teddy Bridgewater. You can certainly say the same thing. Those two guys have the two best chances of starting. And starting a lot this year. Now, as far as what the Colts are going to look like I said, I got them going 10-6 because, I think they're going to win the AFC South. There's no reason that they shouldn't. But some of those teams, other teams could give them some trouble, especially Tennessee and Jacksonville. Because I think those two teams are kind of moving up, and I think the Texans are sliding down just a bit. Now, going to the AFC West, Denver is Denver. Do I think they're going to be as good as they were last year? No. It's hard to duplicate what Peyton Manning did last year, throwing for over 5,000 yards. 5,477 to be exact. And Monty Ball is going to be the starting running back now that Sean Marino's not there no more. But it doesn't really matter. One thing we've known about the Broncos since the Mike Shanahan days is they always find offensive juggernauts at running back that fit well in their system. So that being said, I think that Monty Ball is going to be just fine. He's just about every bit of the back that Sean Marino was. He can catch screens out of the backfield. He's a strong guy. He's quick. He can block. He can do a little bit of everything. And then you got Ronnie Hillman to back him up. Ronnie Hillman can also come in and do some things too. That offense to me, look, okay, they don't have Eric Decker no more. Eric Decker can be replaced. And they already found their replacement, Emmanuel Sanders, who they bring in from Pittsburgh. Emmanuel Sanders to me is a much better receiving option anyway over Eric Decker. You still got the Thomases. You still got Wes Welker. You got Andre Caldwell, who's going to be a backup receiver. Jordan Norwood. Virgil Green, a backup tight end. Cody Latimer. You still got a very good offensive line. That defense is going to be even better now because you got DeMarcus Ware, because you got T.J. Ward, because you got Aqib Talib. And you still got Raheem Moore. You still got Chris Harris Jr. You still got Danny Trevathan. You still got Von Miller coming back from his injury. You got Derek Wolfe. You got Sylvester Williams. You got Terrence Knighton. That defense is going to be a whole lot better than they were last year, I promise you. I promise you. I'm glad they went out and made the moves that they made. And players want to come to this team because this team was just one step away from winning the Super Bowl. I expect Denver to come back and win the Super Bowl, but you're going to hear me talk more about that in the coming weeks. We're going to do a show on the Rocket Sports Breakdown where we're just discussing the playoff picture, who's going to win the Super Bowl and why. So stay tuned for that. Kansas City, to me, lost some pieces on their offensive line. That's why I got them going 7-9. I actually got Denver going 14-2. The only two teams I could see beating them is on the road at Seattle and on the road at Cincinnati, because I think Cincinnati can pull an upset. Patriots, too. You never know. Plus, they got a tough schedule. I'm going to go up against San Francisco, Arizona, and St. Louis, that entire NFC West Division. They got Cincinnati. They got Indianapolis. They got a tough one against Miami going up against Sean Marino. They're going to be going up against their other former teammate in Eric Decker with the Jets. But I got them sweeping the division, much like, kind of like last year. Technically, they got revenge against San Diego in the playoffs. But I got them sweeping the division. I got them going 6-0. I got Kansas City splitting with San Diego and Oakland, and I got Oakland and San Diego splitting with each other. I think only one team is going to come out of the AFC West, out of the playoff picture. I know, isn't that crazy that three teams came out of that division in the postseason last year? Isn't that crazy? It's only going to be one this time, and that's going to be Denver. I got San Diego and Oakland both going 6-10, just because the brutal schedules that these teams have to go up against. It's tough. And Kansas City, you know, not just going up against Denver, not just the NFC West. You got New England, you got Miami, you got Pittsburgh, Tennessee, Buffalo, the Jets. Those are going to be tough games. I think they can go 7-9 or 8-8, but just losing the offensive line a little bit, losing some pieces is going to hurt this team. I know you got Jamaal Charles, his contract and everything. He's my favorite running back in the NFL, but you're going to need much more than that if you're going to win. And I got San Diego and Oakland going 6-10 because I'm just not so sure about what those teams are going to do. San Diego, I think they took a step back losing Kenwood, the 100th offensive coordinator. He single-handedly brought Phillip Rivers from the dead. That's why Phillip Rivers was the comeback player of the year last year. It had a lot more to do with Ken Whitherhunt than Phillip Rivers himself. That system that they ran in San Diego was a phenomenal offensive system. Now, I will say this. Keenan Allen looks like he's going to be an upcoming wide receiver. He looks like he is going to be good. And he's got good size at 6'3", 215 pounds. He did some nice things in that second regular season game against Denver. And even in the playoffs, despite the loss, he looks like he could be an established, quick, top 15 wideout in this game. And maybe he'll even clip the top 10 in a few years. So that's, to me, that's the one guy, the one young player in this league to keep an eye on. He is going to be better. I can see it right now. He has the ability to be that next Vincent Jackson, but much more explosive and quicker. I see that in him. I see a lot of Vincent Jackson in him, but faster. And Oakland, even though they brought in Justin Tuck, Maurice Jones-Drew, Matt Schaub, is that going to be enough? Those guys are veteran players. Those guys have been around the league for a long time. Do you really think that bringing in any of them is going to make your team that much better? You better think again. Because Oakland, the problems are not coming from the outside. It's coming from within the coaching staff as far as getting this team to play better. And who are your wide receivers? I mean, who are you going to be, if you're Matt Schaub, who are you going to be throwing the ball to? I mean, they got Rod Streeter. They got Andre Holmes. They got David Osbury, the tight end. But here's the thing. Do those guys scare you? No. I think we're going to see Oakland have more success probably running the ball because you got Maurice Jones-Drew and you got Darren McFadden. That's a good 1-2 punch at the running back spot. And they drafted Derek Carr. Hopefully he won't end up a bust like his brother did. I'm kind of anxious to see what this Oakland team is going to look like a little bit. You still got Charles Woodson, but Charles Woodson's at the end of his career. You still got Carlos Rogers. You still got Terrell Brown, the cornerback, the other corner. And you bring in Justin Tuck. So it's like, okay, well, what's going to happen with this team? Rod Streeter led the team with 888 receiving yards last year. That led the team. That's not good. That's not good enough to get it done. The Raiders really didn't scare anybody as far as their offense, as far as their passing game is concerned. And I think that's going to be a problem. Luckily, they still got Sebastian Janikowski that can kick those long field goals for them because he's probably going to be asked to do that again. But one thing about the NFL, you never know what can happen. You never really know. And that's what makes the league as good as it is because you never really know. I'll say that. You never really know. As far as I'm concerned, basically, I got the Broncos as the number one seed in the AFC. That's what I have. And as far as the number two spot, I got the Steelers because I think they're going to have a better conference record than the Patriots. I know, right? But that could go either way. We'll see. I got the Patriots at number three. I got the Colts at number four. I got the Bengals at five. And the number six, I actually have the Titans, that 8-8 record. But they could probably go 9-7 if they're lucky and make the playoffs. It's a strong possibility. That's a very strong possibility. So there you have it. That's my AFC playoff. That's my AFC conference preview for this year. Like it or leave it, it's whatever. We're going to take our final break when we come back. I got some other things coming up for you outside the Rocket Sports Breakdown that I'm going to talk to you about. And we're going to end the show in our conclusion. This is the Rocket Sports Breakdown on blogtalkradio.com. We'll be right back. We have now come to the end of our show. I want to take this opportunity and thank everybody for tuning in. It felt great to be back on air after a few weeks. And we'll be back on air again next Wednesday, where we'll be previewing the NFC, plus more baseball and anything else that goes down between tonight and next Wednesday. So we'll have it for you. And then some on the Rocket Sports Breakdown on Blog Talk Radio next Wednesday night, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Just to give you another quick update, yes, it's true. Yours truly will be in Stage Play Soul Custody, another Vanessa Lynn production. We got two shows coming up on Saturday, August the 30th at the Abundant Life Christian Center located in Redford, Michigan, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. The 3 p.m. show tickets are $20 and 7 p.m. show is $25. If you have any questions, you can go to www.soulcustody.info for more information. You can check out the radio commercial. You can see the cash. You can see more information regarding Vanessa and the play itself. More information on what this play is about. I can't tell you the role that I'm playing, but I will tell you, you are going to be stunned. You will be like, oh my goodness. I'll give y'all a hint though. Bring your Bible. And you never know what you're going to get from a Vanessa production. I hadn't even started rehearsing with these guys yet, but I'm expected to see them either tomorrow or definitely starting next week. So I'm geared up for this. I'm excited. I'm excited to be a part of this production. I also have another stage play coming up called The Color Black. We're actually doing an encore presentation. We did the first show back in 2011 at the Detroit International Institute. We'll probably be back at that same venue again in September. So be on the lookout for that as well. And as you all know, yes, I was on the big screen at the Maple Theater just a few weeks ago for a film from the Detroit 40-hour film project Detroit team. Did a short project and everything. I was on set this past weekend for another film, for this time for the MPI project, for MPI student film, the Michigan Production Institute, basically. So that's what that was. That's what we were doing. And we had a whole lot cooking. So that film is going to be shown in October at the Imagine Theater in Canton. Be on the lookout for that as well. There's also going to be another movie of yours truly. The trailer has officially been released on YouTube as of yesterday for The King, which co-stars yours truly, as well as my mentor, comedian Dave Lando, great friend of mine. We've had some great Michigan talent, some great Detroit comics, some funny, outstanding guys. I can't wait for this film to come out. It'll be out next month. I can't give you a direct amount of information, but I will tell you that the film will be out, so brace yourself. I'm going to be on a big screen again. This is actually going to be the sixth time I'll be on a big screen, so I can't wait for this. I'm excited. So, and then, again, tomorrow, if not rehearsing, I'll be at Big Tommy's in Novi performing, stand up there again, much like I did last Thursday. So be on the lookout for that. Until then, Rock Your Nation, get ready for a power trip. God bless every single one of you. Shout out to all my peoples out there, for all my Michigan talent. Y'all keep up the great work, and we will see y'all next time. Take care.